Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Monday's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am your host for this evening, Craig Fowler, and I am joined by Ewan Taylor.
Hello.
And Amy Canavan.
Hello.
And we are back in person once again after a few weeks of having to do this all remotely. It's just not, we're nowhere near as fun.
It's just not the same. It doesn't hit the same.
No.
It's different being in person, doesn't it?
And you need to let people just do massive monologues as well. Otherwise,
can't interrupt.
Yeah, unless you're Duncan McKay. Oh, it's like Duncan's here. Right, guys, a full Premiership weekend. Plenty to talk about. We won't go too heavy on the VR thing because myself and Joel are going to be kind of reviewing the first weekend and what we thought of the new system because we were at two games that had it on. We were both at the...
And everyone's already bored of it.
Oh, yeah, I hate it already. I hate it after the first goal, like the Hibs game. It was like, why is this taking so long?
Yeah.
Hurry up.
Boo.
But anyway, there's plenty to talk about despite that. Not our foot. Even away from VR, lots of goals this weekend. No games at 0-0, thankfully. So quite hard to choose the running order. So just to be lazy, I have just done it in the way that we're going to go basically through the league table. So we'll start at the very top. That was Celtic. Steady you. That was Celtic defeated Heart of Midlothian 4-3 at Tynecastle. A game that I didn't certainly see this coming in terms of how entertaining it would be, going back and forth, Celtic taking the lead, Hearts going in front, Celtic taking the lead again, Hearts tying it up, and then Greg Taylor winning it for the champions in the end. I was doing hospitality. I was actually pretty happy at the end of the day. I was like, all I want is a scoreline and a performance that doesn't ruin my day, and that didn't happen. So I was like, yep, that'll do, whatever, even though it's a defeat. But the state of the Hearts team right now, it at least showed to me there's still a lot of fight in this side, there's still a lot of quality in this side, and once they actually get some proper defenders back into the team, I think they'll be all right. Aberdeen are worrying me a little bit, but we'll come on to them when we get to their match. But let's forget about Hearts for the time being. Amy, what did you make of Celtic's performance?
I think if you were a neutral, it was just a fantastic game. I really do. From a purely Celtic perspective, it wasn't like the greatest of games. It's really struggling to pick out a man of the match, really. And I think, you know, Greg Taylor is obviously going to get the plaudits, but there was no one, even in the three goals prior to that, that really stood out. I think there was obviously sloppiness at the back as well. Celtic making uncharacteristic errors at the back. You know, don't really even need VAR. They're stonewall penalties, or should have been given immediately by the referee on the pitch. But yeah, from a Celtic perspective, it wasn't the kind of complete performance that we've maybe seen over the last two games, because it sort of reverted back to that wee spell before Hibs, prior to the Hibs game, where Celtic hadn't really put in a performance probably since the first half of Real Madrid. But against Hibs and against Motherwell in the Cup in the midweek, there was a real rhythm to Celtic's play. There was a real fluidity. But I think credit to Hearts that they didn't allow Celtic to be that fluid. And I think integral to that was Cammy Devlin. I thought he was superb. Player of the match by a long stretch. I think you're starting to see Celtic really struggle with Matt O'Reilly in that slightly deeper position. I think you're losing that creativity that he has in abundance. I understand why he's filling that void. But I wouldn't be too hurt at, perhaps Adam Moy being pushed back a little bit more and O'Reilly being further forward, because I thought Adam Moy in the final third on the edge of the box was pretty poor, actually. So I think you're starting...
What a miss as well.
What a sitter. I think even I really honestly could have scored that.
All I had to do was lift it, because Gordon was like stretching so far across his goal that he was like basically like about a foot off the ground. If he lifts it, instead of trying to go for the corner, just put a little bit of height on it and it's definitely a goal.
It was very synonymous to... what Ange Postecoglou said would happen the minute he came in. I'm all for 4-3 games rather than a 1-0, 2-0 win. The entertainment factor was absolutely there, and at the end of the day, it is 3 points at a place where Celtic don't necessarily like going. I know everyone sort of goes, oh, thank us, but the record's actually not too bad over the last, 10 outings or whatever it may be.
I thought we were just going to go with years.
Decades.
Okay. since the mid-90s, when there was a proper rivalry.
But, it wasn't a great performance Celtic-wise, but I think nobody's even really talking about it, because just everything that happened, a 7-goal thriller, is just going to overshadow it. And to be honest, I did actually just really enjoy a really good game of football.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that from a Celtic point of view, I thought they were quite lacklustre in the first half, especially. They got the goal, there would have been a goal ahead at halftime if not for that late penalty, but that was really one of the few chances Celtic created in that half, and it was kind of... Going back to the games like the St Mirren one, I'm trying to think if there's any others off the top of my head, where they looked a little bit out of sorts for, A, missing Callum McGregor, but B, the kind of squad rotation that's going on. Second half, I thought they did step it up quite a bit, and they managed to stretch Hearts quite an awful lot. I was still a wee bit surprised myself in how much they stretched it, but I guess that's when you try to play the game the Hearts are playing and trying to stifle them higher up the pitch, you need to have a high line. You can't just have your forwards high and your defence deep, because then you've got nothing in the middle of the park. But they managed to get in behind Hearts an awful lot, stretch them, get their backs turned, going towards their own goal, and that ended up being the difference in the end, because most of the goals kind of came for that kind of situation, especially the winner, which I was... felt very sorry for Toby Sivic. Having watched the goals back, because I tweeted out praise for him on Saturday night, but I wasn't really sure, because I'd only seen the goals in real time. I thought, I don't think he's at fault. Watching the back, he's not. He's not.
Impulse tweet.
He's not. I was fairly certain he wasn't, but I thought I saw that. I'll do it anyway.
What percent is fairly? How strong is fairly?
I don't know. What
that's quite brave to only be fairly confident and go, all right, I'm going to send out a tweet.
Yeah, but I would have, like, I don't know. Yeah. 7 pints by that point, so bravery's already there.
I thought we could
bravery, foolishness, I don't know, you could call it whatever you want.
Because looking at the Hearts team, I thought it was the first time in weeks and weeks where everybody actually looks like they're in the right position, apart from Toby Sibbett, because he was on the football pitch, but then he actually played quite well.
So
that was surprising, but
poor Toby.
He's been pish, but I thought he did all right. It was both Celtics. Well, all the goals were sort of jammy, but they got into good positions to make it happen. Obviously, the first one with Keogh, I don't even know how he did that. For Forrest.
If he doesn't touch it, it's going straight to Gordon. And you think if he does touch it, it's going out for a corner. And somehow, it's a teaser, but right to James Forrest.
Yeah, bizarre. And then, obviously, the winner was off a deflection. I mean, Greg Taylor does great to get there. Michael Smith does the opposite. But it still, it takes a deflection. It wasn't intended.
I thought that in the last replay. I was like, Michael Smith really isn't
not at full stretch.
Yeah, he's not really exactly kind of busting a gut as much as Taylor is there.
No, he's not.
I think that shows, though, that obviously Greg Taylor had just not long came on. I think he was a a fantastic substitution. Obviously, the goal aside, it's very easy to say that when you come on and score the winning goal. But I thought Alessandro Bernabeu was having a howler. I thought he was really, really struggling defensively. And that's kind of been my worry, that even in the last few weeks, we've been praising Bernabeu going forward offensively, very good. That was never even a problem when he first came in. But defensively, I think the concerns are still there. And that was the first time he probably came up against a decent opposition, a decent opponent, sorry.
To be fair.
Yeah.
It's Josh Ginelli, so I would maybe calm down with your decent opposition player. However, to be fair, Josh Ginelli once every seven games is unplayable. This was just maybe the seventh game.
I felt he was very good, but I just don't think that Bernabeu could really contain him. So I felt when Greg Taylor came on, there was a real confidence, a real composure, and like I say, Bernabeu was really struggling, and when Taylor came on, there was just, I think you can see the gulf between the two, especially the fact that they ended up playing in the same game, and not, the rotation's been great, it's been good to have Greg Taylor having a rest, and obviously Juranovic as well. Another fullback position in Tony Ralston, but he played a great role, obviously, in the first goal. You know, from a Hearts perspective, yeah, not great, but that's just Ralston to a T, you know, never giving up on any ball and working his way down to the byline. So I think that, yeah, Michael Smith, I would like to have seen, if it was my player, I would like to have seen him probably be a little bit more intentful towards denying a player or denying a goal. But yeah, you've got the fresh legs off of Greg Taylor, who was so keen for that ball, when Michael Smith probably wasn't.
The probably goal that didn't have, well, it depends how much you want to call the third one luck. You could call it luck, you could call it Craig Gordon being
bad goalkeeping.
Old. Yeah. Look, it's starting to look a bit old and they look a bit creaky.
Called it.
It's starting to look like he is
does
powering down.
As a avid Alan McGregor watcher, I can tell you, they do fall off a cliff eventually.
You could say there's an element of luck just because it's just a terrible error from a goalkeeper that you don't usually expect that from. But the one goal that wasn't any luck, which I knew was coming all game, and I said that as soon as he was in the starting 11, was Giakoumakis. Yeah. Giakoumakis scoring a header against his Hearts defence was an absolute fucking certainty. And I'm really annoyed that I put like 20 odd quid worth of bets on, and they were all bets on Hearts getting hammered. And I did put on a bet with a bet builder, and I had Giakoumakis to score in it. But I wish I just kept all that money, like it must have been about 30 quid in total, and just stuck that all on Giakoumakis anytime. Because then I would have some money, and I would, you know, not be happy, but happier than seeing my team lose and not even any of the bets coming in either. Had that bad goal stood, I would have at least got my money back. I was the only person, the only Hearts fan in the stadium going like, no, don't rule it out.
Giakoumakis' movement is always so good in the box as well. Like it didn't actually need to be that great for the goal, because I just felt the Hearts defence it's like they couldn't even see him. Yeah. Like he's a big centre forward. He's the one that you should really be looking out for. But I think a lot throughout the game, a lot of his work goes unnoticed. He's moving. He's peeling away from defenders, dragging other defenders away. He's a real nuisance in the box, and it's a really powerful header. It doesn't need to be a great header to really get by, because, you know, he should not be allowed that much space in that area right in front of the goal. From a Hearts perspective, it's very poor, but I think Giakoumakis' presence is just so overpowering.
Just don't have enough natural defenders probably in the team, ultimately.
They've conceded so many goals for cross balls because that's a problem as well, and something they probably should have addressed. Stephen Kingsley is deceptively decent in the air for somebody his size, but none of the other centre-halves are. Even Kai Rolls isn't very good in the air when you look at the stats. Craig Halkett's one of the best in the league, if not the best in the league, now that Darren McGregor no longer applies. And Suter was very good at it as well, like kind of getting out about 66%, I think he averaged. So they need somebody else who can head the ball, because it is literally just Craig Halkett right now, and he's still not back. Although I spoke to him today, and he's hopefully been back soon.
What was he doing today?
he was playing paddle.
Enlightened.
It's a new sports sensation.
Yeah, sweeping. It's like a mixture of squash and tennis.
Outdoor, indoor?
It was in, well...
Oh, can I be played in both?
You can play either.
Yeah, and
this... Why am I looking at you, Philip?
It's almost like you sort of play on like a five-a-side pitch, I would say. It's almost so...
Yeah.
So it could be inside, could be outside. But you've got to... You can play it off the back wall.
This one was like a mixture of outside and inside, because it was covered. They had a roof on it, but
it was a mixture.
It was still very much... If you could imagine a five-a-side...
Like at Wimbledon, when the roof comes over, if it's kind of advantage like that, or not. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So I played it in Spain and it didn't have a roof. But then...
Yeah, but you don't need the roof there.
Yeah, you don't need it there. But yeah, in Scotland, when I played it, it's always had a roof. Wisely.
From a Hearts perspective, except from all the players missing, and it was good. I thought before the game, when I saw the teams and I saw that we're going to line up, I was like, Robert Snodgrass in a deeper midfield role, which he played fairly successfully against Kilmarnock. But I kind of thought this game, no way, he's not going to have the legs for this. I thought he was probably Hearts' best player. And I'm quite impressed by the signing so far, even though he's not been used in the way that I think any Hearts fan envisioned when he did sign.
Yeah. Though I think he was marking Giacomakis, wasn't he?
But he was. Nah.
He's just, you know, you're not going to get him winning headers at defensive corners, I'm afraid. It's just, but obviously they didn't have anybody else to do that job. But yeah, I thought he played well.
Right, let's move on. But before we do, we've got another advert. Green King Pubs. Yay, once a day. Green King, your home of pub sport. With over 900 sports pubs across the UK, Green King is where the fans go, showing every broadcast game, every live sporting event from BT and Sky Sports on tap. Now, before on this podcast, I have talked about my appreciation for Green King Pub and at the Kirstorfen Inn. My local growing up was one. But that's enough of that. Ewan, is any kind of Green King pubs you used to live beside?
Yeah, we won't talk about the one I live beside now. for legal reasons. I used to live near the Merlin.
Lovely.
In Morningside. Well, I lived in Brunswick, but it was in Morningside.
Of course you lived in Brunswick.
I did. And
that's why he's the one that stunned up wearing a shirt and tie.
Shirt and tie.
Shirt and tie, yes. Someone has to bring
and
class.
And knows what paddle is. And this just, indoor and outdoor.
I just mix in those kind of circles. And
We do not.
And
I don't mix in the circle of anybody wears a tie. Well, except for you.
You do now. You do now. Welcome. It's a good football pub, but there's not that many good football pubs in that neck of the woods in Edinburgh, I would say.
Because they're too busy playing paddle.
Indeed. And polo. There's a polo club down there.
There is.
And croquet. We also have
and
that.
Golf, presumably,
and
as golf. Well.
Yeah, we do. It's a good, just meat and potatoes football pub, I would say, in Maryland. So if you need anywhere to watch football in Morningside, I would say the Maryland's probably, if not your best bet, the only bet.
I've only been in once, but even that has fond memories because it was after we had watched the finished pilot for A View for the Terrace. We studio something booked out the Dominion. Well, not booked out, but you know, booked a screening in the Dominion.
The entire Dominion, all screens. Nice. I don't care what you're wanting to come and watch, you're now watching this.
Yes.
You're gonna the pilot of these four tubes.
You have to lobby the BBC. five tubes, please. Let's show some respect to Robert Borthwick.
Oh, Robert Borthwick, of course. Sorry, Robert.
Yes.
And we went into the Merlin afterwards for a couple. I've already consumed a few inside the Dominion. And so, yeah. And obviously we've got the pilot and everything. We got the show and everything worked out perfectly, but yeah, well, yeah. I don't think I've been back since. But yeah, I quite liked it inside, so
yeah.
I'll need to stop in next time I'm in the morning side, which will be, I don't know.
Never. When you're back for a Napier alumni event,
yeah.
We can go to that. No, I've been in a few times as well from uni. It's good for it is very good for the football, big screens. And again, as Ewan says, you don't get that many good pubs around that area that'll, you know, especially for the early kickoffs when you're finishing uni about 5 and there's a 5:45 half 5 kickoff. You don't want to be trekking into town. Mm-hmm. So if you just stay out on the outskirts, but no, the Merlin's nice. Nice big place as well. So yeah, big
yeah,
fan.
Spacious.
Yeah, spacious, yes. Yeah. So you don't feel like that anyone's listening at your conversations. So I can talk about people over there because that's what I like to do.
Right, let's move on to the game at Ibrox at the weekend. Yeah. Rangers 1, Livingston 1 with Rangers. I mean, how much time was added on for injuries? Because I just saw this on the sports scene. Injuries and VAR. Because I saw it came up like Lundstrom scored and then it was 90 plus 1. And then, because I remember after the Hearts game, I went to Jesse Mays and it was on the telly. I'm not sure how legal that is. But,
it's not.
It was cut.
I went into some unnamed bar and it was on the telly.
Uh-huh.
And I remember Rangers having a heady chance that went over. And I thought, oh, okay. And then I saw the Colak one. I was like, oh, yeah, was that? I thought it was Lundstrom. And then there's like another two chances. And then Lundstrom puts a header over the bar.
Yeah, so...
So if Rangers could just play the entire game like they did injury
time.
Well,
yeah, so that was... So we actually had... to nerd alert, XG stats. 40% of Rangers XG was in injury time. So, and 25 more than a quarter was after we scored as well. So after the 91st minute,
how is this possible?
Oh, no.
So yeah, so there was five efforts on goal in injury time, some of which were the best, basically the best chances in the game. And Lundstrom had missed a bit of a sitter, really, and that was 98th minute.
That
we
was
only
a
meant
big
to play
chance.
97 minutes, so we got a wee extra one. But there were delays because the VAR red card took a while to sort out.
I am shocked.
That was a red card. But the thing with that, obviously Livingston are down to 10 men, but they also Guthrie got injured, so couldn't defend. So that's actually the reason why that happened, because Livingston only had 9 men. So that is why Rangers all of a sudden started making loads of chances. And had that not happened, Rangers would not have scored. Like, it was one of those games where like, we aren't just absolutely never scoring today. And eventually managed to, but yeah, horrendous performance.
How concerned are you of the performances?
I think the game's a bogey for Van Bronckhorst. I mean, I'd be very surprised if he pulls it back from here.
This seems like the players only responding to him now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the performances have been pretty ropey the whole season. I would say the odd decent one when probably PSV away is the only one you'd really say that was a really good performance. Yeah, a few like 4-0 wins at home, which have been fine, but
4-0 fine.
I know, but like they have fine. Been though. Like, there've been some where they just haven't
Fowler's
been that.
Like, oh my god, please.
I know, but they haven't been that. You know, it's been like Cholak's just like every chance goes in, so yeah. It's like fairly unsustainable. Which unfortunately didn't happen on Saturday, so. You know, we've been bumbling along. We're absolutely terrible against Motherwell. We've been really, really bad in every game since the, and including obviously the Liverpool 7-1 disaster. So
that could be a confidence knocker.
It has been. I think we've learned anything in Scottish football this season. If you could concede 7 goals in a game, that tends to be a knock in confidence, which then has a spiralling effect on the rest of the team, and that has happened to us because we were. Obviously horrendous against Liverpool towards the end of that game. Horrendous against Motherwell. Very lucky to win. I think if we're playing any team other than Motherwell, maybe in the league, we probably drop points. At least away from home. Dundee game. Fucking hell! That is the worst Rangers performance I've seen. That was miles
was
worse
tough
than Livingston.
Watch.
That second
Jesus
half was something else.
Like you're talking about
so
like
bad.
Extra time, you keep looking at the clock. Yeah. Like, I couldn't believe. Like, oh my god, we're only at 52 minutes.
If we play any team. In the Premiership, we lose that, I think, because that's how bad we were. Maybe even a better Championship team than Dundee would have beaten us. And then follow that up with Livingston, which is... I think it was actually better than the Dundee performance, just. But that is four games
fine
in a row.
Margins here.
at least like 3.5 games, you'd say, because we did actually play well in the first half against Liverpool. But since then, just, I don't know how many hours of football that is, but all... utter shite, and if not getting worse, then at least just to stay at that base level. So it's looking pretty grim. I've sort of hoped for a few weeks that Van Bronckhorst was not long for the job, and I think that probably is the case. I don't know if this would be across football generally, but I think a lot of managers might find that the World Cup is a good thing having it mid season, because it's obviously quite a good time to change manager. But I had thought. I didn't really want him. A lot of people wanted him sacked after the Liverpool game, and then just after how bad the Dundee game was, people wanted him sacked even for a win. But I sort of thought, well, his results domestically are good. They're actually the best ever of a Rangers manager. I think if you take the Old Firm games out of it, he's got the best win record of any Rangers manager.
But do they not count?
Well, no, they do. But
it matters.
But we don't have. The point was we don't have any of those between now and.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
So it's like, well, we'll just even if we keep on playing rubbish, we're better. Letting Gio manage these games than like David McCallum. Haven't seen that that Hibs game. Vermarker still now hasn't lost to any other team in Scotland other apart from Celtic. So in almost a year now, so in any competition, so I thought we'll just keep, might as well just keep sort of bumming along. We'll probably not drop many points. We might maybe draw an away game or whatever, but we'll win our home game and it's fine. But and then see where we are, obviously the World Cup. But I think it's fairly unsustainable. I mean, I think he really is now. I mean, we're playing Napoli on Wednesday. I mean, if that's not double figures, then I'd be surprised to this rate. Honestly, we need them to play their B team. I mean, they're already qualified, so hopefully they just don't. Oh, they go easy. Yeah, because if they try, just then we're
stunning
fucked.
Football
we're
right really, now as well. Like they're so good.
We're really fucked in that.
Does
game.
His comments like annoy you or affect? No, like it's sort of affect, not effectively, but when asked, like, you know, we're only in what, mid October, like, is the season sort of done? And he never categorically went, no, of course we can still win the title. And there were some ropey comments through the week.
He just
his attitude, of, perhaps.
He just. I don't, but that doesn't really wind me up. The how he's, I quite like him being like calm, and I don't really, I mean, he boring. Doesn't have much. Yeah, he's boring. He is boring. It doesn't wind me up, but it does wind some people up. And it's just, I think it does, he doesn't really have much to fall back on, Mimran Kirst, because he always needs, you know, obviously results will always fluctuate at pretty much every club, even, you know, even within the parameters of that club's used to. But you, when they go badly, you need something to fall back on as a manager. Now, that could be the way your team plays, if that's really exciting, but you start to lose games, you know, he doesn't have that because it's not exciting. You can be really charismatic. He doesn't have that. So it's like, what does he really have?
A Europa League final appearance.
He has a Europa League final appearance, and that. But and if he had won that, then he'd be absolutely golden.
Half putts in, maybe. Is it?
Two kicks away.
Okay, but you're having too much fun right now. Settle down.
You know, and that was, and yeah, that joyous. Was a great run. And I do think some people sort of are now trying to like reverse engineer that and say, well, he doesn't deserve any something weird happened with that, and he doesn't really deserve credit for it. He deserves loads of credit for that because he was a big part of.
I think it's because everyone's blanking out and going, look where Rangers have come from the last 10 years, being in the depths. I'm like, they were only in a Europa League final a matter of months ago. Yeah, look at this return to the Champions League. Oh, wow. Playing Liverpool at Ibrox. This is, look where they've came from. Only a matter of months ago, they were in the second tier final. You know, that's a huge achievement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That should be the comparison. Of course it is. And going, oh, yeah, but Pedro Cascino was in a bush. Like.
Yes. I mean, Pedro wasn't as dull as Gio.
No, he was great fun.
So he was a good laugh. But
we need more stuff about the caravans from Gio.
Remember Dick Avoca saying all the players had fat necks, which was like some kind of Dutch saying. So maybe Gio needs to crack that one out. But I think it was after a draw against St Johnstone, if I recall correctly.
John Lundstrom has quite a fat neck, I would say.
Yeah.
Is that like being quite bulky as well, being in your shoulders and being quite well built?
Yeah,
what's that dog that always gets like? There's a meme that always gets put about like there's a dog stuck on the shoulders of John Lundstrom. I know what it is. Maybe it's just in like my sort of circle of group chats. I'll find it and I'll send it.
Okay, good. So he doesn't really have anything to fall back on. I think ultimately that's what we'll do for him pretty quickly. We're one really bad, and maybe Napoli they'll just write that off if we get battered, which we will. But that obviously would kill it's sort of dead, but it would kill again the European campaign completely. And then the Aberdeen game this weekend coming.
He's better bloody win that.
Yes. Well, we'll try our best.
Well, I'm already looking at the 5 points between Hearts and Aberdeen and getting worried.
Yeah.
Can't he have them winning games at Ibrox?
No. Well, hopefully not. But it, at the moment, I mean, certainly if we'd been playing Aberdeen at the weekend there, I think we probably would have lost.
Yeah.
So.
Well, let's talk about Livy, because they did play a big part in this game. I was surprised at the setup of their team, because it was a very, very narrow midfield with basically five centre midfielders all playing. But was that the ideal kind of tactics for the fact that Rangers are not moving the ball around well enough? So if you set yourself up and you get quite narrow and you trust your centre-backs and Obelai and Fitzwater to deal with how many crosses, Amy?
73 crosses.
Mm-hmm. And then was that just a perfect game plan?
Yeah, well, I think it worked, yeah. I mean, that was, if anyone subscribes to The Athletic, it's a very good piece from Jordan Campbell, who was like inside the Livingston camp this week, or last week, rather. And that was, you know, Martindale talked about the approach, and that was obviously... that was the approach. Stay ready, narrow. We trust our centre halves to head the ball away. Just don't let Kent come inside. Don't let anybody make runs inside. Watch Scott Arfield. But it was fairly simple. In the game Saturday, just head the loads of crosses away, and that's what Rangers just played into their hands. I mean, it is quite easy to play that, especially when we only played with one winger. So it was only Kent playing on the left, and Arfield was sort of playing a sort of false winger on the other side. So it was very lopsided. There was no real threat from the right hand side, especially because the ghost of James Tavernier is playing right back at the moment. So yeah, Livingston were really well set up, and I think they talked about Martindale in that piece talked about if he was going to change it, he was going to go. I think he said he was going to go 4-1-4-1, but he said, but it's four number eights, not mm-hmm. with wingers. So that was always the plan, like, you know, stay really, really narrow the whole, the whole 90 minutes, which worked. And I think it was just the red card that saved Rangers in terms of getting the drawback, because, you know, Livingston just looked incredibly comfortable defending up until that point.
Right, let's move on to the team I'm a bit worried about at the moment. That is Aberdeen, who went to Fir Park where they hadn't won in seven attempts and won 2-1 in this one, with Majovski and Duke both getting on the score sheet. Jim Goodwin has now devised a system that's able to get those two players into the same team and playing in their strongest positions, which is through the centre, with a kind of almost lopsided 3-4-1-2 that has the back three of McCrory, Stewart and Scales, with Richardson, the previously playing right back, moved up into kind of the wing back role where he can then, because Richardson, for what I've seen so far, doesn't look like too much of a defender or a footballer, but he's somebody that can run all day. So if you stick him in the wing back role and he's tasked with going forward and backwards, that's going to get the best out of him. And it's certainly getting the best out of Duke, who scored again a winning goal. Although the real kind of highlight for this, what I thought, was Miofsky's finish for the opening goal. Oh, just so beautiful. So cool. And I thought, for the initial angle, I thought it was one of those ones where he lifts it, but the goalie kind of moves it away. But you actually see if it behind the goal, he needs to get that much height on it. Otherwise, Kelly is getting to it.
Did you not try that recently and completely fluff it?
First, he didn't succeed.
Well, I know, but I've got in my head that he tried
even
to, like,
better
to
do that again.
Yeah, just did it again, and it worked this time. But I'm sure he had like a one-on-one and just completely fluffed it, trying to dink the keeper. But no, he's a good finisher. I mean, what a terrible offside decision that was to rule it out initially. So I was like, the good side of our. Because that would have been a goal, that, you know, a really nice goal that would have been not given. But
you do wonder how much though they're still kind of in their own heads about stuff like that, though, because it's the kind of thing to wait and to put the flag up at the end, and you wonder how much like they're still kind of getting used to everything, and they're just.
I think that's. It's I don't know. Maybe you don't want it, to rely on it though. That's
yeah, I know.
The point.
But I'm just. Yeah. I'm maybe giving the official.
You're giving a lot of credit.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Maybe, but it's just this possibility, because otherwise, you're right. It's terrible. It's about 3 yards onside.
That was a bad one. But no, it makes. I mean, I think Aberdeen Goodwin definitely deserves a bit of credit for. It does seem. I mean, he's obviously not planned it this way, but he's just tried to work out how to probably, you know, as much trying to like. Deal with some players' deficiencies as you're trying to get good players in the team. I think McCrory actually probably answers his best position probably is one of a back three. I mean, it's very difficult to work out what Ross McCrory
is. We're going to have this conversation about Ross McCrory until he dies.
But I think his upside probably as a centre half in terms of being on the ball is good. Whereas if he's in midfield, he's not good enough on the ball.
Yeah.
I think, but he's one of these guys, you probably do want him in the team, but he's not good enough going forward to be a right back, but then he is probably, you know, he's quite good as a
properly defines like utility player.
Yes.
But you'll know as well, just from a couple of weeks ago against Hearts, like there's a real flair about Aberdeen. And they similarly to St Mirren, actually.
I mean, I did watch that game on a phone in a pub in Milan, so didn't they get the best sense of what Aberdeen were all about.
Other Hearts fans then, who consumed it. There's a real zip about them, and they're just quite enjoyable to watch. Ewan's spot on getting Miofsky and Duke and getting them playing well in the positions that they can excel in. Goodwin deserves an awful lot of credit, and I agree with you with Richardson. The pace there is really quite important, because that's maybe they don't have that elsewhere on the pitch, but what they have a lot of players that can play ball. I'm a huge Coulson fan, really, really like Hayden Coulson. And you're allowing, you know, maybe the pace isn't exactly as, well, nobody's pace as much in Richardson's, to be honest. But it is, you're weighing it out, and there is just a real balance across the side. Obviously, from a Celtic perspective, it's nice seeing Liam Scales playing as well. Obviously, picked up the red card a few weeks ago. But I think he is very comfortable with the ball at his feet coming forward. That was obviously the whole point about when he came on from Celtic, is that he'd played over, he'd played fullback position, centre half position, he even played midfield before as well. So he is pretty decent with the ball at his feet, because that's one thing that I don't think Anthony Stewart's very good at. I think he's good aerially.
He's very, very poor with the ball at his feet.
But I think. I think there's a few worries and a few moments that you go, oh. So I think, just like that. But yeah, I think that there is just
it's
that.
Like Joey Chubby Honey School back to
me. There's a perfect balance, and, you know, Johnny Hayes is still just so good at this. He's just, we're talking about pace, actually.
Comes back into the team, he could give them sort of a bit more, it would be less lopsided, maybe, because they might go with, you know, him and Richardson on both wings. And but the midfield's good as well. I mean, I think, you know, Ramadani's a decent player, Clarkson's a decent player. Is a good player. Yeah. Baron's a really good player. So, and he, you know, he's only just coming back into the team in the last couple of weeks. So
yeah, I don't like this.
Yeah, I think
there's a lot of positives to pick out Aberdeen right now, isn't
it? I don't want
the European tour. I don't care that they deserved it more than anybody, really. for all the years they finished second and third in the Euro, we're falling short of the Europa League. But I don't care. I want Hearts to do it again. Yeah.
So you wouldn't pass the buck, like, even though Hearts, that's quite a good one, actually. So I'm really quite intrigued by that. That even the Hearts dip in league form this season, and I know there's been injuries, obviously, but that has to align with the demands of the European football as well. You would still take that again?
Yes, because that's only how you grow the club further, is that you keep doing it every season until you stop getting papped in Europe and then it affecting your home form. And if you can get to that, you're clearly the third best team in the country, and then that's just a position of power. It's I would even say at the start of the season it was a bit of a long shot, because I knew it would be tough on the Hearts players. Not as tough as what's happened. And not just that, because you also need the coefficient to stay sufficient enough where it is, that it's not going to drop off, because 1 year out of it,
we're really helping out here, Ewan.
You'll just be back to normal.
We're taking a year off.
you did enough last year, to be fair.
Celtic have taken the last 6 years off.
Hertz will help the coefficient when we get a frustrating 1-1 draw with RFS on Thursday. Booze ring around Tynecastle. That was kind of what you want. So yeah, even though it's been a bit of a struggle this year, like, the fact is as well, it's a Hearts have now kind of domestically, I mean, they might not show for anything because they might lose at County, and can't remember, there's another away game coming up soon as well. So it might actually matter for bugger all. But we are only still 5 points away with an injury crisis that, even with the extra demands on the team, I don't think anybody saw coming.
Yeah. It's also that this year is slightly unique in the you know, with the World Cup. So actually,
it's all been crammed in a lot more games.
But there's a lot more. So you can see, I mean, you know, Rangers have had more injuries than we would have. I think Celtic have as well. I mean, the fact that Conor Goldson and Callum McGregor get injured is a sign that the times are coming.
Exactly. So they never get injured.
Yeah,
so
it's like the most robust players. So it's it's been particularly, but has it been a bad year to have these extra games?
I guess the thing that it's a comfort to myself and any other Hearts fan, and to fans of Hibs and St Mirren and anybody else who's kind of eyeing up third place, is that Aberdeen, for all the abilities in their team, and I'm looking through the side, and there's not any position I can look at and say he's a weak link kind of thing. Because even, like I said, Stewart's very poor on the ball, but as long as you don't give it to him, especially if he's playing now in the centre of a back three, that kind of masks those deficiencies. They're strong throughout the side, but they rarely ever seem to put in a performance that's quite dominant, or where they don't kind of...
Well, they've had a few when they've been, down to 10 men.
Either ride or luck, or the other team gets a man sitting off. That seems to have happened quite a lot this season, so it still feels like it's yet to fully click. And in this game as well, Motherwell had their chances. Kevin Van Veen especially. Yeah. I thought the first one was it's one of those ones where...
There should have been an inevitability about Kevin Van Veen scoring against Aberdeen.
Well, no, but it's because I said that it was going to happen on the Friday show. That's
just
why,
you.
That's why it didn't happen. But yeah, the first one where he kind of goes... He manages to nick the ball off the keeper, but it's a bit slight of a narrow angle. He still should do better. It was exactly what I think it was Craig Anderson described as.
Yeah, a lot of players missed that chance.
Yeah, because he was talking about Humphreys' one against Kelly. And so that was a prime example of that, is to slide it past the far post. Yep. But it's his second one. Like, he's 6 yards out, and he literally just passes it back to Ruth. It's
I think
a terrible
he may
finish.
Have been offside. Possibly.
No, I don't think it was.
But it was tight. It was tight. But
so you think he thought he might have been?
Well, yeah, I think maybe, yeah. And I don't know. It was one of those where you would have to get the lines out. I think if Aberdeen do have a weak link, I think it might be emerging in the keeper. Rose, I think he might start to become a weakling. I know he's been decent enough, but he dropped a couple of clangers, I would say. I don't think he did that well for the goal. McKinstry, good finish, but I thought Rose was a wee bit slow to get down, and then obviously the one where Van Veen nicks off him was a bit of a disaster. So from reading about him before he signed, his whole career has basically been like he's got in and then played quite well and then had a couple of games where he just played howlers and then got dropped.
Yeah.
And so I could feel that maybe come back. I mean, they do have Joe Lewis, who's not, you know, he's looked a wee bit rickety in the last couple of seasons, but, you know, he's not probably pretty strong for a number two. So I wouldn't be that surprised at that. I think people said that at the start of the season and it's not happened yet, but I still think it might happen.
Yeah. As for Motherwell, they set up... The knock on this Motherwell side is that they're still quite, what's the word, agricultural. Like a lot of battlers, not really many footballers, but they try to put as many footballers as possible into the starting 11. You had McKinstry, you had Spittle, Tierney and Goss all in the midfield. But I think he maybe overplayed it and didn't quite get the balance
still
right
this
time.
Not overly inspiring, is it? Like, you look across and I'm a fan of Stuart McKinstry. Technically good.
Is that not just levels, though? Because Blair Spittle is a technical player, but whether he's, you know, technically good enough for Motherwell to get, I don't know, top six, I'm not too sure.
No.
So, yeah, and Sean Goss continues to be, I don't know, are you any good or not?
It's like the honeymoon period slightly over for Hamill. I don't know how long it exactly lasted, but like it did though, because I know, and I keep battering back to it, but the defeat to Hearts, they really were impressive, and there was good football played. And against Celtic, there was some good football played, not in the League Cup. But yeah, and then so the switch from in the league to the League Cup was astronomical against Celtic, because it was just, I think agricultural is a great word, just very, is the way that I would put it, rather than agricultural, because I'm tired.
It probably comes from maybe the centre halves, like they can't really play football.
Yeah.
There's no zip. There's nothing that's really getting the beat going. Mm. And, you know, it's frustrating when you do have a striker like Van Veen up top, because... Although not at the weekend, he does know how to find the back of the net. Yeah. But if the last few performances have been very, very poor, I would go as far to say.
I think they still played well, because I think they did play reasonably all right in this game as well. They can maybe count themselves a bit unlucky that they weren't 2-1 ahead, for instance. Anyway, let's move on. Yeah. St Mirren 2, Dundee United 1. I watched this game, firstly, can I say. VR is going to be an absolute nightmare for watching effective time on Y Scout. Because I watched that entire game and I had no idea about the disallowed goal for VR until I watched Sports Scene. I was like, what? When did this happen? I'm fairly sure effective time on VR stopped it as soon as he flung the forearm in the bitch face.
Never happened. That's just. because I wonder that with like stats and stuff. Like, do you count that as possession? Or
no, you wouldn't.
No, you just. So that's
you would
just,
pull it back. That's
just
the foul.
Never happened. Weird. I mean that's obviously the most egregious VAR decision of the week, I would say.
Yeah, because was that a clear and obvious error? I would say no.
And it just seems like it shouldn't. And I know there's all this thing about attacking phase of play and all that, but it just seems that shouldn't. You know, a Dundee United player touches the ball, albeit, you know, just sort of hits off his ankle or whatever. But a Dundee United player touches the ball after that, and yet you're still going back to that. And it was in St Mirren's own half. It just feels too far away. For it to have
and was it definitely a foul?
And yeah, exactly. You probably
not
wasn't
entirely
even,
sure.
No, because he makes a meal out of it. Like,
yeah. It's the sort of foul you'd always see given in Europe. I was thinking if you touch opposition player's face, you always give a foul and you get booked. Tend to get booked. But yeah, that just seemed that's, you know, obviously the worst side of ours when it feels like they're looking at every goal, trying to find a reason to rule it out, which, you know, shouldn't really be the case. So that was pretty just annoying to watch. But compared to, for example, if someone scores from a corner and the corner's been wrongly awarded, the VAR doesn't look at that, or a free kick, because, you know, exactly the same. But then you do look at that. That just seems wrong. But whether they'll ever, you know, try and fix that in VAR, obviously, it's been that's how, you know, it's the same everywhere else. It's not like it's a Scottish way of interpreting it or whatever, but that just seems annoying, and that will really wind people up if that is repeated.
Especially if you're watching an effective time.
Yes. Because don't know that's happened.
Because otherwise, this was a very good game. I enjoyed watching this back. I thought both teams played pretty well overall. Dundee United, especially in the second half, after Stephen Fletcher came off the bench, that gave him a real kind of real shot in the arm. Like, and not just in the ways you kind of think about him, you know, occupying defenders, holding up, kind of thing. He was even good at like running the channels and stuff. It was a kind of Stephen Fletcher of old, and really. They were the better team for most of the second half. They just, that, like a 3 minute period where St Mirren got a few corners and set pieces and then they scored for one of them. And that what ended up being the difference.
Yes. Becoming a very clever side, St Mirren. And, you know, waxing lyrical non-stop about the midfield. I thought Keanu Backus again at the weekend was, you know, just outstanding. Yeah. I think he won back possession 8 times. In the midfield, and you know, Mark O'Hara again, it's just like he's got a new lease of life. And it, not that he's ever been poor, but he's just always been like, right, Mark O'Hara's there. Like, Mark O'Hara's there.
I think it's a perfect team for Mark O'Hara in terms of like you're on a team that's tasked with winning the ball back, and then once you win the ball back, running a straight line towards the opposition goal. That's what Mark O'Hara can do very well.
Yes.
Summed up perfectly there. and Ethan Aherhorn as well. Yeah. You know, they're just very, very talented players. And I think when you've got that midfield click in the way that St Mirren do, and, you know, even I've never really been the biggest Curtis Main fan. Even when he was decent at Motherwell. But I think he looks like he's getting involved and St Mirren are getting him. He's not just right the target man.
You can see his confidence for that shot he had as well.
Absolutely. What is he doing?
He's amazing at shooting and hitting the bar from miles out, which is, albeit, you know, that's of limited
challenge.
Use. But yeah, but he did it at Ibrox.
Yeah,
an unbelievable shot off the bar and he did it again there. So yeah, fair play to him. Because sometimes he looks so clumsy. And then any other times he does things just
silky,
like,
it's very, very really hot and cold. But there's a real joy watching St Mirren right now, and you can totally understand why there was or still is potentially a little bit of interest in Stephen Robson in the Northern Ireland job, because you know he's came in and you know if you think back to that League Cup campaign in the summer, there was some dreadful football played, really, really dreadful football. But he just bided time and said, you know, just hang fire sort of thing. And there were rightly St Mirren fans getting pretty worried that this is, we can't go on like this. But having that little bit of faith, you know, they are going to be up there in contesting. I know that seems a very cliche thing to say. But what we're saying that, you know, like even Ewan's saying about Rangers, like there's not even the performances, like, so they're getting the results, but the performances aren't there. So Mirren are matching the results that you're getting. The performances are really, really good, really, really solid. That we haven't seen from St Mirren. I don't actually know if we've seen such consistent performances from St Mirren of late, because you know you would never, it's little throwaways. You know, you would never think to see St Mirren in the top three, top four, or anything like that. But you really can now because they're playing the style of football that warrants it and that merits it. And yeah, I'm thoroughly enjoying watching them right now, and I never thought I'd say that.
Yeah. They're one of the more consistent teams in the league, I would say, in that you do pretty much get this more or less the same performance from them almost every week. And you know, sometimes that's not enough. When they played a couple of the bigger teams, but obviously, you know, it was enough to beat Celtic, and it's been enough to win quite a few games at home as well.
Six them in the joint third, just behind Aberdeen on goal difference.
Yeah. I would say that you would think they would finish top six at the moment.
Oh, they have to. I honestly think that it could be deemed quite a disappointment if they don't. And I know we're waxing lyrical about the midfield, but like, I'm a huge fan of Ryan Strain as well. I think he's a really good source, defensively and offensively. I honestly think that it's of no great expectation, or I don't think it's being over ambitious to think that St Mirren should be finishing the top six this season. Absolutely.
United in this game, especially the second half, I think the first half, was it more of a... No, actually, I think it was a 3-5-2 the entire time, wasn't it? Yeah, because Middleton up front, with what? Yeah. It wasn't like a three like they've used in previous games where Jamie McGrath was on one side and Middleton was on the other. This was just... So interesting that they went with Middleton. They were trying to kind of get him a lot in the channels. Especially
he was decent the week before as well, though.
Especially the left channel. But it just seemed like when Fletcher came on, him and Watt together just looked really good. So...
Yeah, you're bringing out the best of Tony Watt.
Just do that. Yeah. Like, I don't know why you've not done it all season, but just do that.
Yeah. That was
your best
in the summer. It just
seemed
like, oh, that'll work. Fletcher and Watt will work together, but they've just not really...
What was flung out onto the left wing, though, wasn't it? And he was operating. That's not where he's supposed to be.
I'm not even sure, like... I've been a bit busy in recent weeks. I'm not entirely certain whether they've done it like recently, but I can't remember a time all season where I've seen Watt and Fletcher actually playing up front together.
No, there should be a partnership because you know, Stephen Fletcher as well, he's, as much as we're saying that was a Stephen Fletcher performance off old at the weekend, you know, he's not at this age and at this stage in his career against many in the top flight going to be able to hold that all by himself. You know, he needs that support. He's going to win you the ball, but he's not going to go on a daisy and run or anything like that. And you don't really want him to, because you want to preserve that energy and let Tony Watt go and do all of that, but don't fling him out onto the wing.
Right, let's move on to the main highlight of my weekend, and that was Hibs 1, St Johnstone 2. I was there on Friday night for the end of the fight, the first introduction of VAR in Scottish football. And my God, Hibs should have had this game well out of sight before St Johnstone done anything. St Johnstone were absolute shit for 70 minutes, and it was really no surprise considering the team that they put out. I tweeted that at half-time. The front three of... Who was it on the right? The front three of Dre Wright, Nicky Clark. Nicky Clark, actually, I'm sorry. I actually rate you as a player. You're getting this wee bit of stink by association here.
Dragged down here.
So, yeah, Dre Wright, who, again, Dre Wright and wing back, fine. In a front three, no. Dre Wright, Nicky Clark, and Conor McLennan. Now, McLennan did put in the ball, Conor McLennan put in the ball for the winning goal. But other than that, I don't think he'd done too much in this game, and I continue to be like, not impressed by his prospects of becoming anything really in Scottish football. But yeah, so that was the front three with, again, Ryan McGowan in midfield, and again, he played his part at the end. I have to kind of couch this with literally everyone was saying about St Johnstone, and including like Callum Davidson
did it work,
finally bringing on Stevie May. And again, it was like at 1-0. But it's like, is this what he wants? Does he want to, is he just there to
lull into a false sense of security? Absolutely.
Just make sure
he's like, Fowler's going to tweet, and Fowler's going to tweet, so I've got this. He's waiting, the thumbs quivering over.
I'd even been drinking at that point either.
Chicks.
But because they were dreadful, they were really bad, and they'd done absolutely nothing. And Hibs were good. Hibs played with a lot of dynamism. Yeah. The performance from Mikhail Kurachev.
Kukurevic.
Performance of Mikalai up front, I thought was very impressed by him. I thought he's looked good in other games, but I thought it was his best game for Hibs overall. Yeah. Not only is he a big guy who's good at holding up the ball and can win headers, as he's shown, he's also, his movement's very good. And maybe could have got one or two other goals in addition to the goal he scored. But I thought that was a very impressive performance. Martin Boyle, not vintage Boyle, but a good showing as well. There was a number of Hibs players throughout the team. The back three was all playing really well. And then Kyle McGinnis. So I thought it was weird. I thought it was weird at the time that
He wasn't hooked.
Yeah. It was 60 minutes when they were making the change to bring on Juhan. Myself and Patrick McPartland, who is the Hibs correspondent for the Evening News, were discussing who we thought would come off. He thought the big guy would come off, to be fair, and he was right. I thought Kyle McGinnis should have come off instead, and I was right.
I think many Hibs fans agreed with you.
Yes.
by Twitter.
Yeah, Lee Johnson said that he was McGinnis. His running stats were still good, so that's why he was left on.
But he's also, like, taken away from perhaps, you know, any sort of hot-headed moment happening anyway, you know, and picking up another yellow card. But he is still just coming back fresh from an injury.
Yes.
Should he really be not trusted, that's not the right word, but should he really be expected to play 90 minutes?
I would say no. And I would also say as well, if you're looking at his stats, it's not just that. I mean, there's also mental fatigue to go along.
Pre-injury, he was never even always a 90-minute player.
Yeah, well, there's that as well. You're just going to get concerned he's going to break down again.
Well, too much time in the gym, Kyle. He looks just like he's too big.
A unit.
Yeah. He does look quite a unit.
Yes. But I thought two bad tackles as well.
There's no
question that they weren't considered. They're not red cards, but you know, they're getting that way. A wee bit more force than they would have been both red cards, I think. So just poor, I would say, the decision to leave him on, and then St Johnstone came out to play after that. Bizarrely, then Porteous. I enjoyed that. No, that is
Jim Goodwin.
Tony and I, I'll call him what I like. Tony had made the point in the group chat, but that, I think that is something that's the biggest flaw in his game. To me, is not being the rash tackles, because he actually has never done that very regularly. Yeah. He's I think more or less kept it to Rangers games for some reason. And
I wonder why.
Yeah, because he likes to give photos of himself getting sent off against Rangers for some reason. Anyway,
in games that they get beat. Ryan Portridge is going to be listening. This is exactly why I do it.
Well, each to their own. But
see my paddle next week.
But what's a bigger flaw in his game is pretending he's been fouled when he hasn't been, and he is going to have to remember that VAR is here now,
and Martin Boyle
get away with that. Yeah, well, Martin Boyle also. He is definitely a what Jim Goodwin called Ryan Portridge. I think he does need to remember that you're a big lad, you just head the ball away and don't let Nicky Clark, you know, putting two hands on your back mean that you just fall over and think you'll win a header, you'll win a free kick. That was really poor, I thought, and just sort of weak and a time in the game where you really needed to step up and sort of see them over the line. So the nation's sweetheart has taken a couple of steps back, I would say. In the game of Friday.
How long have you had that waiting to the nation's sweetheart?
Well, a while since. I liked him as much as anyone after that game against Ukraine.
And then it was another good week.
he was always going to fuck up, and he did. So yeah, fuck your IDs up. I would say Porto.
Right, let's move on to our final game. Kilmarnock 1, Ross County 0. Amy.
I think I watched a different game to Malky Mackay. I watched this game on Saturday and I was not totally enthralled by it. Certainly not from a Ross County perspective. And I was largely surprised that Malky Mackay came out and said that he was proud of his players, the effort that they put in, thought they came down to Ayrshire and put in a decent performance. I don't really think that they did, in all honesty. I easily could have been failing at this point and missed every single opportunity. You know, there were moments...
They did have a few late chances, so maybe that's exactly what you were doing.
I think, yeah, but that doesn't make a great performance at the depth that you, at 1-0 down, and as tip, you know, it...
Away from a team that's got the same points as you.
It epitomises a six-pointer, doesn't it? It's a footballing cliche, but it really, really was. And especially with the result for St Johnstone the night before as well, that seemed slightly pulling away. Obviously, St Mirren ended up getting that late-ish winner, so the Dundee United are still down there with them. But this was a huge game no matter what. But from the off, I thought Kilmarnock came flying at the traps and easily could have been, I think at half-time, you know, if you were dead at McInnes, I think you'd just totally be scratching your head as to how you weren't 3-4 goals up. They really were. They even actually didn't even need to be that good. I think Ross County were that bad. The gaping holes in the county shape, if you ask me what formation Ross County were attempting to play, I'm not entirely sure.
I looked up in Wyscott earlier.
Mm. Right, okay. I think it was 4 at the back, but at times there was 2, and at times then there were 6. The gaps were horrendous, and the goal epitomises that as well. That it's there's no clearance from the defence. It's a simple ball back over from Power. It's a nice little flick on, and then I don't want to take it away because it's a terrific finish from Danny Armstrong. There's a lot that he still has to do. I know there's the slip of mm-hmm. Ross Laidlaw, but he still, it's kind of what we're saying about Miofsky's as well. It's a very nice finish, a curling finish, and he proper caresses it into the back of the net. And Danny Armstrong's confidence is sky high right now, and rightly so. But I think you could really see that from Kilmarnock from the off as well, that, you know, there was a swagger about their play. They were really zipping the ball about with a bit of pace. And I think that eventually died to death towards the end of the first half, letting Ross County have a few chances. I think maybe Zach Hemming did maybe need to pull out one save, but nothing that you would be not expecting your goalkeeper to save. And that's why I don't really understand what Malcolm McKay was saying. After the second half, they did come out the better side, and for 15 minutes were pressing on Kilmarnock, absolutely. And then there were a few decent saves from Jordan White, Jan Danda, and I think Awura Edwards was certainly the most influential for me. Mm. But after 60-minute mark, that was it. You know, it was very comfortable for Kilmarnock to see out. And I think that's something that I think will please Derek McInnes a lot as well, because especially just obviously the other week, being unable to see that out against Hearts. Obviously, it's a wonder goal from Nathaniel Atkinson to
Nariaka.
So you can, you know, that's just a moment of quality sort of thing. It's not more that Kilmarnock couldn't see it out, but there was a lot of good things and positives for Kilmarnock to take out of that in a very grueling week, and a huge week in their season. But for Ross County, I really do worry because I don't see where the goals are coming from. Their defence is a mess right now. Their injuries are starting to pile up. Ben Purrington's out, who had been pretty impressive since coming in this summer. I'd quite liked him. And there just wasn't a lot of... Ross Callaghan went off injured inside 15 minutes, which obviously you lose a little bit of creativity and a little bit of... meatiness in the midfield, perhaps. But yeah, I just really honestly don't understand the match that Malcolm Mackay watched.
It does feel like, you know, obviously last season Ross County were a lot of those things, but they had Charles Cook and Hungbo. And now they've got Edwards, who's he's great to watch up until just the last bit.
Yeah, doing him.
Yeah, so...
He'd be great if they pair were still there.
Yeah. Yeah,
remember what I said after the week? This is the best thing I've got right all season. When everybody was like, oh, what a signing he is. I was like, let's just chill out a bit. It's one game. And he was going up against Nathaniel Atkinson, not a great defender.
He did look
on himself.
Tremendous in that game, though.
And Atkinson was taken off because he was ill. So, like, no. Can we settle down? And he didn't score. And he didn't score and was taken off after an hour. Can we stop before he's put in the Hampden Hall of Fame?
Yes.
It is just week on week now that we're saying, we're adding, like, oh, mind how wrong we were at the beginning of the season that Ross County could be a side. And because there is no evidence right now of Ross County playing well. There's not any evidence of good football. And the fans are getting frustrated by it. And you can understand because, like I say, this is a huge game and you should be able to compete against Kilmarnock. And I really don't think that they did. I think, yeah, Danny Armstrong was very, very good. I'm a big fan of his.
Who the fuck is he? Yeah. I know he used to play for Raith Rovers. Yeah, I'm aware of that guy. Yeah. I'm not sure this is the same guy.
I think he's 25 as well. So you're like, where have you sort of been beforehand? Yeah. Raith, but we do know. So that I'm answering my own question. But it was never a name that sort of stuck out. But the
former county as well.
The confidence is really there. Mm. And you can see why. It was obviously a great header in the midweek as well, to send Kelly back to Hampden. And Ryan Alibuyuso as well. I'm a huge fan of his. His stats at the weekend, I got shown them and I should have took a screenshot and I never, but they were just, they'll be all over your Kelly pages if you so desire to go and look at them and consume them and drool over them, because they were so good. He's a real, real talent, and they won't be holding on to him.
I know that Craig Anderson was also impressed by Jordan Jones. I saw Kelly fans more.
Yeah, he picked up a wee injury early on as well and managed to brush it off, so...
I saw Kelly fans moaning that he didn't beat anybody with the ball, but Craig was just impressed that continually throughout the game he took the ball like so far high up the pitch from A to B.
Not hard against Ross County. And that's the gaping hose. You know, you could probably land a helicopter in the middle of from the defence to the midfield. It was really, really worrying. I know it sounds I'm going really heavy on County, that I'm just not agreeing with Malcolm Mackay. I mean, that I'm recording these interviews going, what have you just watched? I'm like, my match report totally does not represent or reflect what you've just said. Because it was just, it was not that we had watched the same game. And I get morale boosting and all of that, but I think there comes a time where you've got to go, right, this isn't Hearts.
Well, it might be blasting them in private and sticking up for them in public. Managers, especially these days, kind of like to do that.
Mm. I'll stick my ear against the door next time. Or I'll do a Jordan Campbell and just go in.
Yeah, exactly. Join in training.
He wore an Arsenal top. I'd wear a what Ross County needs something navy. A Bologna.
Mm. Yeah. Nice. Good choice.
Right, that'll do us. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you guys for joining me. Amy?
Bye-bye.
Ewan?
Goodbye.
And we are going to go record the Patreon right now. So if you listen to that, some extra minutes of us talking pish, that is over at patreon.com/terracepodcast, where we're getting up enough podcasts per week to fill our quota. I think we might have missed one last week, despite me having an absolute disaster with my MacBook. Getting everything erased on it and losing several podcasts.
Always have a backup, kids.
Yeah, I'm an idiot. Anyway, goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.